This is Jay Sekulow, the ACLJ at the United Nations today.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. And now, Chief Counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, Jay Sekulow.
Hey everybody, welcome to the broadcast, and let me give you an update on something very quickly right at the top of the broadcast, and that is your American Center for Law and Justice team is at the United Nations right now, literally on the floor at the General Assembly at the United Nations. In the next segment of the broadcast, we're going to be joined by Than Bennett, our Director of Governmental Affairs. He's leading a team of five ACLJ staff, lawyers, and government affairs experts to address the issue that is a very big concern for us. In fact, we have just published a report calling Advocating for Human Rights is the title, 2018-2019 report. This is filed at the United Nations General Assembly. So when you support the work of the American Center for Law and Justice, we actually not only talk about these issues, we are actually advocating on this issue. In this particular focus for the 2018-2019 report, the focus is on Christian persecution. In fact, I've sent out an email today. Let me read you some of this. If you're not getting our emails, you need to. Just sign up for those at aclj.org. That's aclj.org. This one says, Christians are suffering and dying more than any other religious group in the world. We're going to the UN today to stem the deadly tide before it's too late. An alarming study, this was a study issued by the British government, described the current state of global Christian persecution as being, quote, this is from the report, close to genocide. More than 80% of the persecution victims globally right now are Christians. There are other religious minorities also being persecuted, and we point that out as well. And then we said in the Middle East and North Africa, Christians face horrific violence, abduction, torture, and murder for their faith, and it is genocide. By the way, and we're representing individual families. In addition to global representation, we then take that representation down to individual family members that we are being contacted by to help defend their loved ones that may have been captured by groups like Boko Haram and others. Christian children, as you know, especially in Africa right now, are living in constant fear. I wrote in the email that the nightmare has to stop before Christians completely disappear from portions of the globe. And I think that's a real threat, that the Christian population is being annihilated so significantly. So today we're taking the next step as we vastly expand our campaign to defend persecuted Christians. Today our team is going to the United Nations in New York to meet with numerous countries, urging international community efforts to apply maximum pressure to protect Christians. So what does this tell you? It tells you that, in fact, we're not just talking about the issues here of persecution. We are fighting for those that are being persecuted.
Yeah, absolutely right. And in fact, when you look at this report, and many of you will receive this in the mail, this report we printed out for you, and it's pretty thick here. This is just the work that ECLJ has done on really six specific topics. So it's not all the work they've done in the year, six specific topics. The first is we call these universal periodic reviews. That's what the UN does. They select countries to review when it comes to religious freedom. So in this, we supplement what the UN does with our own review of the countries that they're reviewing. So we're reviewing religious freedom in Iraq. You'll see the full report here. Iran, Egypt, Bolivia, and Kazakhstan. So you see the breadth of countries there. I mean, this is not all just the Middle East. It's not all just the Muslim world. But we also included in this report a written statement that was submitted by the ECLJ requesting that the UN recognize the growing persecution of Christians and other minorities in the Republic of the Union of Myanmar. And take immediate and appropriate action to condemn that persecution. So you can see the ECLJ, through our European arm and having this official status at the UN, is able to really get involved in the effort to combat global Christian persecution around the world in places you may not even recognize is happening.
All right, we're taking a break. We come back, we'll be joined by Than Bennett from the United Nations. He's there right now leading our team. And let me also encourage you to support the work of the ACLJ and our European affiliates, our affiliates around the globe. You just heard what we're doing right now at the UN. We're in a matching challenge. ACLJ.org. Any amount you donate, we get a matching gift for. That's ACLJ.org. And again, we're in the last few days of that matching challenge, so your support is absolutely critical. Again, ACLJ.org.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our Matching Challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
All right, as I mentioned before the break, our American Center for Law and Justice team, our European Center for Law and Justice team in at the UN right now. And joining us on the phone is our Director of Governmental Affairs. He is at the United Nations. That's Than Bennett. Than, I'm looking at the report that we've submitted. It involves reports on Iraq, Iran, Egypt, Bolivia, and Kazakhstan, all involving religious freedom. What's the latest?
Yeah, Jay, I'm actually here at the UN right now looking at the flags of the UN on the banks of the East River here. And I would just give you a little bit of background first for our listeners. That, Jay, this is why we pursued consultative status in the United Nations so many years ago, so we could be here advocating for the members of the ACLJ and the ECLJ on issues that are concerning to them. Jay, that report that you're looking at, that is just a sampling of the work that we've done over the last calendar year. The United Nations does what they call universal periodic reviews, which means about every 4.5 years, every country of the world gets reviewed on human rights issues on a rotating basis. And what we do at the ECLJ is come in and supplement that work because, Jay, you know, we've talked on this broadcast before, there is a huge institutional bias at the United Nations. So our role as an NGO with consultative status, we can come in and give an outside perspective. So you've been talking about religious persecution around the world specifically targeted at Christians. That's what we focus on in these reports. We are going to be presenting those reports on Bolivia, Egypt, Iran, Iraq, Kazakhstan, and Myanmar, or Burma, to the delegations this week. And look, over the next couple of weeks, you'll see in the media, you'll see all the dignitaries, the presidents, the world leaders coming here. Jay, we are here in advance to lay the groundwork for as those delegations come to town, their staff, their committee staff, will have already heard from us and heard from the members of the ACLJ.
So, Than, I want to sense, I think this is important for our audience to understand that we, as I keep saying, we don't just talk about the issues here, we're actually advocating aggressively on these. The religious persecution issue is a big one because a lot of these countries, I mean, there's a global issue of persecution right now aimed at Christians and other religious minorities, and that's front and center for our work here at the American Center for Law and Justice and our global affiliates.
Yeah, no question about it, Jay. And look, I think the breadth of it is lost on a lot of people. I mean, you see the headlines that are obviously incredibly important, things like genocide at the hands of ISIS, the persecution at the hands of the likes of Boko Haram, and we're certainly going to focus on those. Those are tremendously important. But, Jay, there are other vast swaths of the globe right now where other forms of persecution are taking place. I mean, you know, for those who are listening in the United States of America, it might seem strange to them that there are places where you cannot expand your church facilities or where you have to disclose the membership of your church or those who donate to it. Those are issues that are very rampant around the world, too. So you kind of look at that spectrum, Jay. Yes, a lot of genocide, a lot of Christians facing the loss of life for their faith. But also in other places that might get overlooked, we try to shine the light on places where the Christian church and other religious minorities are not able to practice their faith. And I would just tell you, as I look across the street here at the United Nations, these are issues, Jay, that don't get raised here unless we raise them. I mean, they want to focus disproportionately on censoring Israel because of the institutional bias here. That's what makes our voice so unique and so important, because it's in a place where, if we don't raise these issues today, they're really not raised.
Yeah, Than, in a sense, because of the Trump administration's decision, I don't think it was a bad decision to pull out of the UN Human Rights Council, but because of the ECLJ's involvement in the UN Human Rights Council, we are able, and I want to make sure people know, Than is at the UN in New York with a team from our D.C. office, so a U.S. team. He's in New York at the United Nations. It's the belly of the beast. Like as Than said, I mean, this is the most anti-Israel body in the world. And the U.S. pulled out of the UN Human Rights Council saying it's so anti-Israel, we're not going to endorse this anymore, especially fund this anymore. But through the ECLJ and our team, Than, we are still able to raise the issues that the U.S. might have in the past. We still make sure those ambassadors have to listen to the atrocities going on around the world, and then sometimes the atrocities going on in their own countries by their own governments that appoint them.
Yeah, and it's a really important point, Jordan, because I would go so far as to say that the decision by the United States to withdraw was exactly the right decision and really the only one to be made, because the United States had to lead by example. However, the reason that we are still here is so that the voice on the voice of sanity on these issues still resonates. One of the reports that we're going to be sharing with delegations, Jordan, is on Myanmar. That was a written submission that we made to the United Nations Human Rights Council. So that's a chamber that the United States has now stepped away from. We can still issue these reports to make sure that they hear about the religious persecution that goes on there. And just one other point that I'd make sort of in furtherance of that premise. You know, D.C. style advocacy, Jordan, that's not typical up here. I mean, we get accustomed to it in Washington, D.C., going through the halls of Congress, making voters' voices heard in the halls of Congress. That doesn't happen very much here. It's just sort of out of the norm. So when we come up and deploy that kind of advocacy here, bringing the voice of the American people and really our members all over the globe to it, people stand up and take notice. They're used to doing this work. I'm sad to say, somewhat in the cover of secrecy. They're not used to people's advocates being present and actually asking for meetings with them to press these issues. But again, back to the original point I started with, that's why we pursued consultative status all those years ago, so that we could change the game and start making a difference from the inside out. So the correct move, Jordan, for the United States, also the correct move for us to be here on the ground pressing these issues.
One of the things I noticed in our report and that we actually refer to, and this is where there's a lot of, Than is there right now in the UN building at the United Nations. But there was a lot of work that went into the preliminary work before you actually get up there for these meetings and for this advocacy, and that's these reports that we filed. And we actually pointed out in our report that we submitted with the UN, again, I'm holding a copy of it in my hand for those watching on TV and Periscope and Facebook. I've got a copy of it here, and it says, this is what we cite. We cite the Office of the United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights. According to their own this is their report. So these are their words that we are quoting. And it says, the so-called Islamic State of Iraq and Levant, which is ISIS, continues to commit systematic, widespread violence and abuses of international human rights law and humanitarian law. These acts may, in some instances, amount to war crimes, crimes against humanity, and possibly genocide. That is from the High Commissioner of Human Rights at the United Nations in his assistance to the mission for Iraq. And that's just one country. They were talking about Iraq, and I can go through each of the other countries and point to issues. But this is an ongoing work effort at the ACLJ to keep this going. In other words, we've got to file these reports. There's research that goes into it. There's analysis that goes into it, and we're able to get that done. So I want to let you know, to our audience to know at the outset here, that we deploy a team to New York. They are fully engaged and ready to go. Than, let's discuss what a meeting will look like.
So, Jay, what a meeting will look like is, well, let me put it this way. The 74th session of the General Assembly is what we are here to address. And in a couple of weeks, you'll see all of the world leaders having their debates, debating the resolutions that are put forward. What's happening right now, Jay, is the delegates for those world leaders are drafting the resolutions and debating the issues that they will consider when they're here in a couple of weeks. So what a meeting will look like, we're focusing on South American countries and Latin American countries. We will go in and actually meet with the delegates that are drafting those resolutions to be considered. Just to break it down one level further, the General Assembly is broken down into several committees. The third committee is the one that handles issues of human rights and religious persecution around the world. So we will go into a country. I won't name all the countries we're meeting with today, but we have some here in just a couple of hours. And we will meet with the delegate for the third committee who are drafting and debating the resolutions the world leaders will consider. So as, when our members see that happening here in a couple of weeks, we will have already met with the staffers. Yep. Who are drafting those resolutions. And, Jay, the other important thing, we'll be able to follow up with them going forward to make sure these things are actually implemented.
All right, we're going to have more with Dan Bennett when we come back from the break. But let me tell you something, folks. We are in the last several days, as you know, of our Matching Challenge campaign. And here we've deployed a team that's currently at the United Nations. Hey, Than, you're still with – how many do you have with you right now?
Yeah, we got a team of five here, Jay, from both our D.C. office and then also based out of Tennessee. Team of five.
So we got lawyers out of the Nashville office. We got government affairs and people and lawyers out of our D.C. office. Where our European Center for Law and Justice is the organization that has the non-governmental organization status, the NGO status. We fought hard to get that too, folks. I mean, we really fought to get that, and it took a lot of work to get it, and we did get it. I remember advocating for that. That was like arguing a Supreme Court case just to get recognition. But we got it, and we use it, and we use it for good. And they're up there right now. And before they went, a lot of work, I mean a tremendous amount of work, goes into preparing reports like this that will be distributed to the General Assembly even today. And this is before the big meetings of the General Assembly coming up in a couple of weeks. So here's what I want to encourage you to do. Support the work of the ACLJ. We've got about 5 days, not even, I guess 5 days, for our Matching Challenge campaign. We are even with last year. We need to be about 7% ahead. So your support makes a huge difference. If you've donated, thank you. If you have not supported the work of the ACLJ, let me encourage you right now. It's very easy to do this. You just go to aclj.org. That's aclj.org. And any amount you donate, and if you donate $5, the ACLJ gets $10. If you donate $100, we get $200. So again, we've got someone that's going to match your gift. So let me encourage you right now to go to aclj.org. That's aclj.org. Support the work of the ACLJ. Of course, it's tax deductible. Your gift makes a huge difference, especially this month.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our Matching Challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.
Hey, welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. If you have Facebook or access to Facebook or Periscope, let me encourage you, tomorrow night we're going to have a lot of fun. We're doing a live concert that we're going to be broadcasting in front of a live audience here in our media headquarters. And it's a lot of new songs on this list that we put together. The whole band's going to be, everybody's going to be in town. So John Schlint and John Elefante will both be with us. And Mark Townsend, of course, John Lowry, and the rest of the gang, all of us will be here. So the whole band's going to be here. We got a brand new set list, and it's going to be a lot of fun. And this is a concert we do in support of our Matching Challenge campaign at the ACLJ. We encourage you to be part of that. We're also taking your calls. Van Bennett, our Director of Governmental Affairs, is leading a team of five right now. I mean, as we speak, at the United Nations, speaking out for those who cannot speak for themselves. That's what this is all about. At the UN especially, the issue of religious persecution, we want to make it front and center. But, Van, as you said, you got to get it there, because even though there's all kind of reports, putting words to the reports and action to the words is a different task.
Well, a couple of things, Jay. I mean, first of all, it is the culmination of a year-long worth of work for the ECLJ. These reports are important. We file them throughout the course of the year. But then, Jay, you know, it also can be that a report will get lost in a sea of reports if there aren't people on the ground to actually put words to them, put a face in front of the delegates who need to put those reports into action. That's why we're here today. And it does make us a little bit unique, Jay. There aren't a lot of organizations in the world that have consultative status up here to be able to file the reports and then the resources to send people to drive that point home. Yes, the work may have been done over the course of a year, but this really is the culmination of a lot of it, Jay. We're going to go press the issue with the delegates who are considering it and make sure that the voices of our members across the globe are heard.
So let me explain something to everyone. I think this is really important. And Jordan, you've been doing this a long time too. This, what Than just said is the truth. This is a year-long process. It culminates in these meetings, but the process of preparation to get it to the meeting stage is voluminous. I mean, we are actually doing initial preliminary research on these issues a year ago for a report that we issue now, but it takes a year. It's like preparing for a Supreme Court case. I mean, we go through a tremendous amount of data to advocate for people that cannot advocate for themselves. And when you support the work of the ACLJ, you're allowing us to do just that.
That's right. And what is important here is that it's a year's long work. And as Stan said, and I can attest to this, at the United Nations, most groups have maybe a person in Europe that can go give a report every once in a while at the UN Human Rights Council, or they hire someone to do that temporarily. We have dedicated teams both in Europe and in the United States. So where the UN meets, both at the General Assembly in New York and where the Human Rights Council meets in Geneva, we've got teams there constantly. So we're not just preparing pieces of paper and sending them off, documents off to and say, hey, look, see, we do lots of work. Here's all the paper we produce. We actually take it to the leaders, to the ambassadors. Puts them on notice. It's like when you receive a document like this about your country, it says your country is doing all these bad things. And by the way, we're going to pound you in Geneva in a few weeks with our French team, who's going to get up and say, you're doing all of this. It has an impact because you're putting them on notice at their embassy in New York, their mission in New York. And then you're confronting them at the meetings. And then ultimately culminating confrontation at the UN Human Rights Council.
And we also do oral intervention. So we do, not only do we have meetings, not only do we do the research and submit legal memorandums and policy papers, but we also attend and participate in oral interventions. You've seen those on this broadcast many times where we do these interventions. We've had our clients come to these various meetings to present the case after we work with them for a period of time. So that is what this is all about. All right, we're taking your phone calls as well at 1-800-684-3110, 800-684-3110. Let's go ahead and take a call.
Right back to the phones we go. Julie in California online too. Julie, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hi, Julie.
Hi, Jay and Jordan. I've been listening to what Than has been discussing with you. It's a bit hard to understand all this about the United Nations, but one of the things he said is that his team is helping to prepare resolutions that will be discussed. And I've been looking up some UN General Assembly resolutions like 194.
Yep.
That, for instance, said that all of Jerusalem needs to be placed under United Nations control.
Right.
So the input that he is having can have a huge effect. Secondly, I just want to get in real quick. He said you cannot imagine other countries, the churches, having to give a list of their membership.
Right.
I can easily see this coming to America if
I get concerned about that. I get concerned about that. I'm a big advocate of the. I don't like the idea of government getting lists of churches or nonprofit organizations. I think there's significant First Amendment issues there. You mentioned the issue about Israel. So there's another example. So we have an office also in Jerusalem. So when you support the work of the ACLJ, you're not just supporting our work in Strasbourg, France, which handles Europe, but also our office in Jerusalem, which handles the Middle East. And those offices are involved in all of this work. We just did a document that was widely disseminated at a very high level within governments and non-governmental organizations. It was reviewed by our offices in Washington, lawyers in Atlanta, Tennessee, and also in Jerusalem and Virginia Beach, Virginia, where Regent University is headquartered. We have an office there. All of that's part of it. Dan, quickly talk about the oral intervention, and then I'm going to play one for you on this issue of persecution. But talk about the importance of the oral interventions.
Well, Jay, it puts a face with a story and a crime. I mean, a lot of times the debate here at the United Nations will be stale. It'll be stagnant, and it'll just be facts and figures. When we do oral interventions, we do try to either bring a story of someone who we're representing, you know, Saeed Abedini, Andrew Brunson, John Saul, just to name a few. And sometimes we will bring a family member of a victim to put voice to that story. And Jay, I mean, you've been in the room when this happens. When the family member of a victim starts speaking, heads turn, people pay attention. It's a very powerful tactic.
So sometimes it's the family member, sometimes it's our senior staff. This is one with our senior staff. Take a listen to this.
And I give you the floor to the European Center for Law and Justice. The floor is yours. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. Mrs. Special Representatives, children in Nigeria are facing a grave threat due to the atrocities being carried out by Boko Haram. With over 50,000 children orphaned by jihadist violence in northern Nigeria, children are often preyed upon and weaponized as suicide bombers. The UN must act now to protect children in Nigeria. Reports estimate that since 2013, Boko Haram has abducted approximately 1,000 children, killed over 2,000 teachers, and destroyed more than 1,400 schools in northeast Nigeria. These attacks and kidnappings have been carried out when children are at school and should feel safe. 15-year-old Leah Sharibu continues to be a prisoner of Boko Haram. She was one of the 110 girls kidnapped in February of 2018.
By the way, that particular case, we've been in contact with family representatives of taking on direct representation there. But that gives you a sense of what this is, folks. So again, not just talking about it. Our team is deployed there. We're hitting it both on a meeting basis, on written advocacy, and then you just saw oral intervention by one of our lawyers from our office in Strasbourg, France. Your support to the work of the ACLJ is the reason we can do this. We are in the closing days of our matching challenge campaign, and I want to encourage you right now to support the work of the ACLJ. It is really critical. ACLJ.org. That's ACLJ.org. Any amount you donate, we get a matching gift for. We are about even with last year. We like to be 5 to 7% ahead. That is the goal. We're a little bit behind our goal here. Your support, tax deductible. You donate $50, we get $100. Because we get someone else that matches your donation. Let me encourage you to do that today. ACLJ.org. You're seeing the work in action. ACLJ.org. When we come back from the break, take a look at some political movement that's going on as well here on the domestic front. Back with more in a moment.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. And now, Chief Counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, Jay Sekulow.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the broadcast. We're taking your calls at 800-684-3110. We spent the first half talking about our work at the United Nations, our team deployed there right now. You heard from Than Bennett, our Director of Governmental Affairs. We have five team members up there right now. Year-long worth of work to produce, advocating for human rights, a memorandum that we submitted to the United Nations. You heard one of the oral interventions that our team did, so all of that's happening. Now, that impact of what happens globally has a domestic impact as well, and we are seeing a significant, look, we're in political season. It started a little bit early this time, but we are here. The polls are changing on the Democratic side of the argument, and I think it is fair to say if you look at it right now, this is now, I'll give you the real clear politics average, but it's changing. So it still has Joe Biden at 27%, Bernie Sanders at 16.7, Warren at 16.2, Harris at 7.3, Buttigieg at around 5%. However, the more recent polls have showed a significant tightening. In fact, one of the polls, Monmouth poll, and this was conducted from the 16th of this month to the 20th, shows former Vice President Biden at 19%, both Sanders and Warren at 20%. Monmouth polls usually, Jordan, are not outliers.
No, they're not outliers. What does that show? Joe Biden is in dangerous position. Even that real clear politics average, he's dropped below 30. 34-35% was very key for Joe Biden because you can win a primary with that. You can win a primary for president if you've got multiple candidates, if you can get 32-33% of the vote and maintain that. What he's now seen is that even in the real clear politics average, he's below 30%, so he's in big trouble. Yeah. And then when he looks at the newest polls, single polls, he's got two candidates ahead of him. Now, ahead of him by 1%, but their messages are very different than his. Sanders and Warren's message is talking to a different group within the Democrat Party. And Joe Biden, whether he's saying, you know, his brain's not is working and every gaffe after gaffe after gaffe, and the question I think which is realistic and I think voters out there understand, is he too old for the job, too out of touch for the Democrat Party for the job? So he's not in touch with the base, obviously. I mean, he's like so never able to really put together exactly. He doesn't know where he is ever when he's speaking. He gets all the states and the cities confused. I mean, I think it's just fair to say this guy's in trouble.
So I wasn't going to play this, but our executive producer is insisting. So Will wants me to play Vice President Biden.
I want to be clear. I'm not going nuts.
I mean, when you start saying that, you
what
are going.
What was after that, I wonder? Do I even want to know? I don't. Okay, so Harry, I'm looking at it now, and it says, you know, so it says 40% at least, and you say it's more, we'll talk about this, have gone with what I would call the very progressive wing of the Democratic Party.
Precisely. So if you look at the poll numbers and if you dig more deeply, you will find that within the Democratic primary voters, the ones that are driving the ship, if you will, at the moment, that probably between 45 and 55% would label themselves progressives. And Joe Biden is losing in that category. So his primary argument for his candidacy has always been his electability. And so in some respects, he is an avuncular, likable guy who makes a ton of gaffes, but now his primary argument has disappeared because if the Monmouth poll is correct, both Warren and Sanders are in the lead, and more likely than not, if one of those two drops out, the latter person will gain their support. Yeah. So Biden's lead is disappearing rapidly.
All right, folks, we're taking a break. We can come back to your phone calls. How are you reacting to this Democratic campaign? Who do you think it's going to be? 1-800-684-3110. That's 800-684-3110. Do you think the Democrats are going to nominate? We'll want your comments on that. But let me tell you what we also like you to do. Support the work of the ACLJ. We're in the closing days of our matching challenge campaign. It ends Saturday at midnight. Your support makes a huge difference. ACLJ.org. That's ACLJ.org. And any amount you donate, we get a matching gift for. And that's really important as we move forward. You just heard from Than Bennett. Tomorrow, by the way, we're going to be talking about some of the life issues. Why? Because we're in court tomorrow. So we want to talk about all that. ACLJ.org. We'll be back with more in just...
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our matching challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
I got to get Ricky Skaggs back over here. We had a great time. We got to get him to come in for one of our concerts. I'll tell you what. I'm going to see if I can work that out for like the November-December concerts. That's the next Maxing Challenge months. See if we can get Ricky in with us to play. That would be a lot of fun. We're doing one Wednesday night, and the full band's going to be here. It'll be on Facebook and Periscope Live at about 8 o'clock. You'll get a notification for that, so we encourage you to stay tuned for that. I want to take a little bit of an informal poll. I want to hear from our radio audience. Our Facebook and Periscope as well. You can get your comments in. I want to know who you think the Democratic nominee is going to be. I think it's already tightening up very significantly. We'll take your comments on that at 1-800-684-3110, 800-684-3110. Harry Hutchinson, our director of policy, just talked about the fact that he thinks it's closer to 50% going with the progressive, if you add up the Warren Sanders wing and Kamala Harris, some of her support, and some of the others pushing 50%. What do you think, Wes?
Yeah, I think it's true, and it's probably alarming as far as the general election goes if they really want to elect the next president. Anytime you have to tell people, by the way, concerning that clip that Will played, that you're not losing your mind, it's not a good day in politics. But Joe Biden in the past has come out guns blazing and then drops off in his previous two attempts to be president. But here's the thing. Whether or not the Monmouth poll is an outlier, the fact is the Democrat Party is moving more and more and more to the left, but in the general election, America remains a center-center-right country, so that when you start factoring in how moderate Republicans and independent voters will vote in the general election, this poll bodes well for Warren and Sanders. It does not bode well for the Democrat Party actually electing the president.
All right, so let me encourage you. We want to know who you think the next the nominee for the Democrats are going to be, or maybe the top two, whatever you think. 800-684-3110, 1-800-684-3110. By the way, talking about the politics of it, Jordan's got a book coming out in about a month. It's called The Next Red Wave. It's available at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, wherever you buy your books. You can pre-order it now. Let me encourage you to do it. It's a really interesting read about what's coming up in the political environment, what we expect. I think that if the parties do show such vast differences, which I think is what you're going to see here, real differences between the Republicans and the Democrats, not that there always hasn't been, there have been, but at times the policies look very similar.
Yeah.
I don't think that is the case any longer.
No, and what we talk about in this book, and it's in the first line, is that they're not going to be caught off guard, the left, by Donald Trump this time. So since he won, they have been preparing to beat him. They tried to take him out with the deep state. We get into that. They tried to use these different elements of our government, whether it's the FBI, and there's news about that in McCabe today and Is he going to be facing criminal charges? That should be announced pretty soon by the Department of Justice. That was breaking today. But we get into all of the things that President Trump fought against to get elected, that he's going to have to go up against even probably more so this time around. Yep. It might not be as obvious, so you might not have the Jim Comey-type characters. But remember, we found out a lot about that after the fact. We didn't know about it while people were voting. So we know that the Democrat Party is priority number one is to beat Donald Trump. That is their number one priority. So what this book is about, The Next Red Wave, what we try to do here for you is prepare for it, is prepare you what you need to be doing to prepare for victory in 2020. When we talked about how
these are conservative issues that are important.
We beat back the IRS. We beat back, you know, the FBI and some of these entities, right?
Yep.
But we're going to have to be ready to do it again. We're going to have to be ready to do it again, because let me tell you something. These bureaucrats and Democrats, their number one goal is not the House and Senate.
No.
It's beating Donald Trump, because they feel like if they don't beat Donald Trump this time, they have lost a whole generation of voters as well. This whole message that we're all racist and we're all Islamophobic and xenophobic, and that supporting Israel is now supporting a racist or apartheid state. That's why we better fight back. So that's why we wrote it for 2020. We don't usually get this political, but all of us who wrote this book have partisan political experience at the presidential level. We have the legal experience and the policy experience, and we tell you what to do at your local level using the issues we talk about on here to what you do at the local level.
People forget the grassroots aspect of politics.
So what we talk about is gathering, growing, and then going. So check this book out, Next Red Wave. Pre-order it today. We really appreciate those pre-orders. You can go to thenextredwave.com and make your pre-order today.
All right, we're going to take your calls on who you think the next nominee is, or the nominee for the Democratic Party is going to be, and give us one or your top two, maybe. 1-800-684-3110. I got a quick question for Harry. So it's, if you look at these numbers, I just did some math. So it's 2020, that's 40. If you looked at Sanders and Warren, Kamala Harris is 8, right? So you assume, what is that? Well, that 8% is what, 6%, would you say, probably progressive?
Yes. Particularly the California component.
Yep.
Go ahead.
O'Rourke, 2%. Definitely the progressive. Far left progressive wing. Cory Booker, what do you think there?
I'd say 50-50 that he tries to appeal to both progressives and more middle-of-the-road voters. Some of his policies are crazy, but so he has some progressive
support. That puts you pretty close to 50%, though. I mean, yes. That's you could have 50%, Wes, of the Democratic Party saying socialism is not a bad word.
Absolutely, and that they will take your private health insurance away, that they're for open borders, that they're for health care for illegal immigrants, and on the list goes. But again, it illustrates, Jay, how out of step they are with most Americans, not in the Democrat Party at all.
With Americans.
But with Americans.
Well, I thought about this, you know, Harry, we talk about economic impact. So the unions, one of the champion aspects of unions has always been health insurance.
Yes, and that's since 1948. That has been since World War II price controls. The unions switched their focus from getting wage increases to focusing on health care benefits, in part because health care benefits were not seen as taxable income.
So how do they react, if you're a union representative, to a candidate that comes out and say it'll be universal health care, no private insurance?
Well, I think the rank-and-file workers will go ballistic because they have worked long and hard for private health care. So, for instance, in Michigan, many auto workers, when they retire, they have been eligible for lifetime health care, private insurance for both themselves and their spouse. And now Bernie Sanders and the Democratic Party, by and large, is saying, we want to take it away from you. In addition to which, of course, they want to take away private health care from Medicare recipients. Keep in mind that for Part B, many individuals have private health care insurance as a supplement to Medicare. And so I think it's a crazy idea.
Does the leadership of the unions, though, I don't think they could, if the rank and file says, we are not going to take this, I think even the union leadership is going to have trouble saying, oh, we're just going to cave in on health. This is the cause celeb legitimately for the unions.
I think so, but I also think it's important to keep in mind that many union leaders lean more toward the left than rank-and-file members. Yeah. And so one labor union has already announced its support for Bernie Sanders, but that is driven largely by leadership preferences as opposed to the preferences of rank-and-file workers.
Wes?
Yeah, the Union of Electronic and Radio Workers just yesterday, as Harry mentioned, they have come out and endorsed Bernie Sanders. But again, I think there's a just like there's a disconnect between the leaders in the Democratic Party and most American voters. I think he's right. There's a little bit of a disconnect between union leadership and the rank and file. The union leadership, you know, they vote, but they're not the deciding vote in an election. The rank and file people of America, the people by and large, Jay, that elected Donald Trump, they are represented, I think, in the rank and file of the unions.
All right, let's go right back to the phones. We're taking your calls, 800-684-3110. Who do you think it's going to be? That's what we're talking about.
Dennis is calling in from Connecticut on line one. Dennis, welcome to Jay Secchio Live.
Hi, Dennis.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
What's your feeling on Buttigieg? You know, when he came onto the scene, you know, with his military background, I think he's a sleeper. Do I think any Democrat could beat Trump? No. But if there was one, his military background and Trump's lack of that, you know, prior to him being president, I think he might be vulnerable there.
Think here's the thing with Buttigieg. He's raised a lot of money. He's getting a lot of money from Silicon Valley. I think his problem has been in the debates he has not performed well. His policies are not well articulated. He does not meet the progressive label of what that wing of the party is looking for right now. He's kind of he's viewed right now as kind of a moderate, and that's not to his advantage with this body politics.
And I think he's got to be careful not to oversell the military thing. He was in the U.S. Naval Reserve. He did do a tour in Afghanistan.
Yes,
that's true. Yeah. And so that's all accurate. But this is a guy who comes from the world of academia and big business. So like McKinsey and Company.
Right.
And yes, he was a Rhodes Scholar. He's also 37 years old. I'm not sure we're a country right now that wants a president the same age as me. I mean, that's what we're talking about. I think that we have a lot of complicated issues. That doesn't mean he can't be an advisor. That doesn't mean he couldn't be brought on, I think, at a very high level by some other Democrat to play an important role. But let me tell you something. He's polling horrible.
Yeah,
his city is a disaster, South Bend. I think they said he took it from the fourth best city in Indiana to the third best, and now it's going back towards the fourth because of some disasters there. So unlike Beto O'Rourke, who went back to El Paso when there was the crisis there and the shooting, it's like Mayor Pete kind of ignores where he's mayor.
Yeah. So I think if you look at the numbers, I mean, the best he polls, which is no way this is right, is the Economist poll where he got 8%. The rest of them have him at 3-4. So I just don't think, I mean, look, anything can happen, but I just don't see it. I don't think he meets the criteria for what they're looking for. Don't forget, ACLJ.org for that matching challenge campaign. ACLJ.org. We'll take your calls at 800-684-3110. We come back from the break.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's matching challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our matching challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.
All right, we're taking your calls. We want to know who you think the, right now as it stands, who do you think the nominee for the Democratic Party will likely be? 1-800-684-3110. That's 800-684-3110. Let's go right to the phones.
Yeah, back to the phones we go. We'll go in order. Warren in North Dakota, online 5. Warren, welcome to JSecu Live.
Hi, Warren.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Absolutely.
I think it's going to be Elizabeth Warren, and I think it's going to be her because Bernie's out of control, freak out, angry all the time.
Yeah.
Elizabeth Warren's a university professor who has practiced talking to people who need safe spaces, written that book, Fighting Chance, and also the Democrats don't mind that she's lied about her heritage because they voted for Slippery Willie knowing he lied and knowing he took advantage of basically racism.
I tend to agree with you that I tend to think it is going to be Elizabeth Warren because I think there'll be a coalescing at some point. But Bernie Sanders, who is coming off very angry.
Yeah, he screamed at people at a restaurant just yesterday. Wouldn't take pictures
with
people.
I saw him at a restaurant in Washington about a month ago. I didn't go over it a little bit longer than that. Yeah. He and I were at the same Mexican restaurant.
Yeah, but he was, staff. He's on the campaign trail. People at the restaurant want to take pictures. That's what you do when you're a candidate. Screaming at him, hollering at him. I think,
that doesn't work.
Nope. His tone doesn't work anymore. I think that's why younger people are moving away. And he has this kind of like his freak show supporters around him. But the truth is the real left, I think, is moving to Warren. So he's got his kind of wild world. Bernie world, which kind of looks like a circus when it has a picture behind it. And then Warren's got the real left. Now, the great thing about Warren, I think, for Republicans is she was a Republican like Hillary Clinton until the 1990s. So she was actually a Republican longer than a lot of Republicans have been. She was a Republican longer than Hillary Clinton was. So until the 1990s, Elizabeth Warren was a Republican economist. She's going to have to answer that to Donald Trump.
She's in a Republican economist who's now in favor of universal health coverage.
Yes, I mean, to Donald Trump, who was supporting more Democrats than Elizabeth Warren in the 90s. Think about that. And she's going to be the far
right. Donald Trump's not going to catch him by surprise as much this time.
No, he's not going to catch him by surprise. But Elizabeth Warren she is Pocahontas. She's been labeled that way. And even a lot of people in the Native American community have not fully accepted her apology tour.
I know that. That was bad. I have to say that was
In 2019, if you're having to apologize to Native Americans in our country because you lied to get a job at Harvard for it, you may have disqualified yourself for becoming president. You might get the nomination. I think the Democrats, that looks like where they're on path to do is Elizabeth Warren because she puts out a lot of paper. They love her plans.
Yep.
That also makes it easier to beat you, by the way, when you put out all of your plans this early. And you have much time.
That's an interesting dynamic, the fact that they've come out this early. Wes, what do you think on that?
Yeah, I think Elizabeth Warren probably is going to be the nominee. But on the other hand, she's going to have a tough time tacking back towards the center. What I think will really be interesting at this next debate, for the first time, she and Warren will be on the stage debating each other in real time. It'll be interesting to see what kind of jabs they start taking at one another and start really eating each other's
lunch.
Now,
that's assuming they get down to 10 candidates.
Right.
Yeah, they're trying to get it to 10. Harry, where do you see it going right now? I mean, I do think that your analysis about 50% progressive is about right. Really out there.
Well, essentially, I think the caller is onto something, that Elizabeth Warren right now is the prohibitive favorite. It's important to note that she appeals to cognitive, college-educated elites who dominate the Democratic primary, particularly the individuals who are highly motivated. It's far from clear, however, that she appeals widely to working class Democrats. And so I think that's going to be the key issue for her. That's number one. Number two, she has shifted her policy positions dramatically over the last 15 to 20 years. And number three, she's not above using a privilege as a way of advancing herself. So one of the big questions for her is, A, how did she become a Harvard law professor?
Yeah.
Was it because she claimed American Indian status? That's number one. Yeah. And then number two, how did she accumulate $12 million? And if you notice her campaign, she is now focusing on billionaires and gazillionaires as opposed to multimillionaires, because that would implicate herself. So I think she has some headwinds ahead, but I think right now she would probably be the prohibitive favorite going forward.
If you look at the data where it is, and if the Democrats want to get this debates down, and they're going to eventually want to get it down to four, and then three, and then two. That's how it works. You would, if you basically from O'Rourke, he might barely make it at the 2% threshold. Booker would barely make it at the 2%, but Yang, Castro, Gabbard, Klobuchar, Williamson, and Steyer would be out if it was today.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about a much smaller field. Then I think you start seeing real barbs getting thrown, because Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders would end up, I mean, they cannot both survive in this. Her campaign is saying they can appeal to voters outside the Bernie Sanders realm. I think that's true to some extent. I think Bernie Sanders does have like a limit to who he can appeal to.
Yeah.
Elizabeth Warren can make a broader appeal.
Right.
But they are killing each other right now.
Right.
If you take one of them out,
yep,
Joe Biden may not even be in this race anymore.
Yeah. No,
you
know,
think
that.
About that. If he fell like to fourth or fifth place,
he'd be out. He'd be out.
Which would be, by the way, very typical Joe Biden.
Yep.
Joe Biden is being saved in this race right now by keeping Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren neck and neck.
All right, let's go ahead and take a last call here.
Yep, Terry in New York online too. Terry, welcome to Jay Sekulow.
Hey, Terry.
Hey, how you doing? Well, the way I see it is, you know, America knows better when it comes to the left crazy people. They just know we can't afford that. We just can't afford it. So I don't see any of them ever beating Donald Trump, and Joe Biden's going to beat himself. I'm just thinking there's got to be somebody in the closet that may come up all of a sudden, and they're going to say it's kind of late, but yeah, let's take this guy, because none of them.
Well, except their primaries are 4 months away. They're already in debates. I don't disagree with you. I understand what you're saying, Terry, but the debates have already started. The primary start, first one's what, February? So we're already in basically September's going to be here and gone, and you know, it's going to move very quickly. So you're going to be in October before you turn around. October, November, December, January, boom, the primaries start. So I think what you're probably looking at, as I just said, I think the only ones that may hang in there a little bit longer is Buttigieg, O'Rourke, and Booker. I think Yang, Castro, Gabbard, Klobuchar, Williamson, Steyer, gone. I don't see how they get past this actual next round of debate when they narrow that debate down. It just doesn't seem likely. All right, so as we close the broadcast out, let me encourage you to do something. Number one, tomorrow night at 8 o'clock, Jay Sekulow Band, we're doing a live concert here at our media center. We've got a live audience. It will be live on Facebook and Periscope, and we encourage you to be part of it. We'll be taking comments. We're going to have a really good time with it. Having said that, don't forget to be there. We'll play an encore presentation probably on Saturday night. That's the plan right now, but it'll be live tomorrow night. Now, also, don't forget our matching challenge campaign. So you saw our teams deployed in New York today. Tomorrow, we've got teams that are before administrative hearings, also in New York, on the life issue. International Christian persecution one day, life issue the next day. That's the work of the ACLJ. And then we just gave you 30 minutes of legal and political analysis of what's going in our country so you can be educated and informed. All of that because of your support for the work of the American Center for Law and Justice. So let me urge you to do something. We are in the last 5 days of our matching challenge campaign. And that doesn't until the end of the year, November, December. We don't talk about it again until the end of the year. So we encourage you to help us get over our goal. We're about even with last year. We want to be about 5 to 7% ahead. You go to aclj.org. Any amount you donate, we get a matching gift for. That's aclj.org. We encourage you to do that today.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family.